are on air for Fanfare Racing's NASCAR Race Review of Kansas with Hot Topic Sound Off coming up at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, Sal Segala will be joining me tonight, but it might be a little bit later. So I'm going to kind of make sure I cover at least this first half hour, and then as soon as Sal comes on board, we'll bring him into the queue. Let me go ahead and tell everybody what our agenda is for tonight. This is the Kansas race review, three races at Kansas Speedway this weekend, starting with the ARCA Menards Series season finale at Kansas Speedway. We are going to cover that in the first 10 minutes of tonight's show. And then at 8:40, we're going to have Nick Sanchez come on board. He won the race at Kansas Speedway this week, his very first ARCA Menards Series victory. And Ty Gibbs took the title. But real excited for Nick Sanchez getting that win for Rev Racing. He's part of the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program. And real excited to talk with him tonight about that first victory. Then we're going to change this up just a little bit. When we get done talking with Nick Sanchez, we're going to do the review of the NASCAR and Xfinity Series race at Kansas. And then at 9:30, we have another guest joining us, and that's going to be Kyle Keller. Kyle Keller will come on board at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. He is a two-time late model champion at Madera Speedway, and we're going to talk to him about that during the 9:30 half hour. About 10 to the top of the hour, just before our Hot Topic sound off, we're going to use that last 10 minutes to give you a few updates from the Truck Series and maybe even the ARCA Menards Series West. They still have one more race for their season finale coming up at Phoenix. So we'll talk about that during that half hour. So don't pay attention to what's up there on the page for Blog Talk Radio, because that has changed. And I thought I updated it earlier today, but it doesn't look like it is. So anyway, 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fanfare Racing crew. And tonight we do have Jay Huseman and Tommy Kraft is back to cover our Hot Topics here for tonight. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the ARCA Menards Series. We're going to set this up when we talk to Nick Sanchez, because I want to get his thoughts during these last few laps. What happened on Saturday night is that 20-year-old Nick Sanchez, part of Rev Racing in the Drive for Diversity program, hailing from Miami, Florida, won that season finale for his very first victory. About six laps before the finish of the race, there was a caution setting up a green-white checkered overtime finish, and Sanchez was starting in third place, while Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs were kind of battling it out for that top spot. Nick Sanchez was able to go underneath both of those cars while entering turn one of the next to the last lap, and he was able to hold off Gibbs on the last lap in order to take the checkered flag. It was his 22nd ARCA Menards Series start dating back to last season and his very first victory. So a big night for Nick Sanchez. He's the sixth different ARCA Menards Series winner this season. And he made the jump to full-bodied stock cars after winning the Wendell Scott Trailblazer Award in 2019 as the most outstanding minority driver in the NASCAR's weekly touring series, the Advanced Auto Parts weekly touring series. So you might recall as well that both Nick Sanchez and Raja Carruth, teammates at Rev Racing, have announced plans to race part-time schedules in the NASCAR Xfinity Series next season. And they're also going to be competing full-time in the Arca Menard Series, racing for the championship. So we will definitely talk to Nick Sanchez about that as well. But while Nick was celebrating in victory lane, Ty Gibbs, who also won the Sioux Chiefs Showdown Championship and the CGS Imaging 4 Crown, was preparing to celebrate his victory as the season champion for the Arca Menard Series. So it was a big year for Ty Gibbs. He had 10 wins, and that places him all time in the series with the wins championship leader Frank Kimmel for the third most victories in a single Arca Menard Series season during the modern era. Only Tim Steele, who had 12 wins in 1997 and 11 wins in 1996, has won more in a single year. So big race for both Ty Gibbs and for Nick Sanchez. It's also has been just an amazing year for Ty Gibbs and for Corey Heim. Corey Heim has had an amazing year. It's just that his amazing year came during the same year as Ty Gibbs had an amazing year. He was able to take the General Tire Super Speedway Challenge, which is comprised of Arca Menard Series schedules at paved ovals greater than 1.5 miles in length. So it's really contested among the car owners rather than the drivers. So a team using multiple drivers has the same chance of winning as a team with a single full-time driver. So those events include Daytona International Speedway, Talladega Super Speedway, Kansas, Charlotte Motor Speedway, Pocono, Michigan, and Saturday's finale at Kansas. So that was taken by Corey Heim. Now, Drew Dollar, J.P. Bergeron finished fourth and fifth, respectively, at Kansas for the top five drivers. Chris Wright, Kyle Sieg, Dean Thompson, Raja Carruth, teammate to Nick Sanchez, and Parker Chase all round out the 10 drivers. So, again, a very big night for the Arca Menard Series, their season finale. And just to give you the final rundown here for the points, Ty Gibbs was the leader. That's why he was the champion. He is the champion for 2021 in the Arca Menard Series. He has 35 points ahead of Corey Heim, who is in second place. Nick Sanchez comes home in third place. Then it was Thad Moffitt, Brad Smith, who rounding out the top five. And it should be noted, only two drivers ran all 20 races, and that's Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim. Nick Sanchez ran 18 of the 20 races, Thad Moffitt 16 of those 20 races, and Brad Smith 19 of the 20 races. The next five drivers, Drew Dollar, Taylor Gray, D.L. Wilson, Kyle Sieg, and Jesse Love, also part-time, ranging from 10 to 14 races between those five drivers. So really only two drivers running all 20 of the Arca Menard Series races this season. Now, joining us here shortly will be Nick Sanchez. And in fact, there he is right now. I'm going to bring him into the queue. And first of all, Nick, I want to say congratulations to you. How exciting was it to get that victory at Kansas, the season finale, and you get your first victory in the Arca Menard Series after 22 starts?
Yeah, you know, it was everything. You know, I think it happened in pretty dramatic fashion. You know, personally, I don't think me and my team saw it coming. I feel like really, you know, at the moment we were shooting for second or third, and then, you know, restarts, you know, they bring opportunities for, you know, it could go your way and it also could not. And, you know, we just, you know, we made the right moves. You know, my spotter made the right calls, and we were able to come away with a win.
Okay, well, let's set this up, okay? Because six laps to go, there's a caution. That sets up the last and final restart, green-white checkered overtime for the Arca Menards series in their season finale. In the lead are Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim on the front row. You're starting in third place. And the green flag waves. These guys are battling for position for that top spot. And just tell us some of the thoughts that were going through your mind as this kind of unfolded in those last laps.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. I thought, you know, I was racing Corey. I feel like, you know, once we were on older tires, we kind of evened out. But, you know, there really wasn't much time to think. You know, I got a time to start, luckily, pretty well. I got to Corey's left rear, side drafted him, and you know, once I was clear of both Ty and Corey in the middle of one and two, you know, I felt pretty good about it. And then you know, from that point on, I was trying to block the air off the 18. Yeah, you know, it was you know when I got the checkered flag, I still couldn't believe it. Like there was kind of no words, but it all went by in a blur.
Yeah, you beat two of the best drivers in the Arca Menards series, Nick Sanchez. That had to be kind of a really good feeling to know that you were able to do that.
Yeah, you know, they both have a lot of wins. You know, when I look at them, I see more resources than us. And I think, you know, by the middle parts of the year, we started to even out with Corey. You know, we just had bad luck, and I think that's where we lost him in points a little bit. But, you know, Ty's been in a league of his own. You know, even since the beginning of the year, he hasn't had the best of luck. That's probably why he was in a points battle with a 20. But, you know, to beat him, especially after him winning the Kansas Xfinity race, you know, I know we didn't beat him off sheer speed. You know, we just made the right moves in the restart. But a win's a win, and, you know, to go against him on a day like that, I feel like, you know, it showed a lot for me and my team.
Okay, now, Nick, you're part of Rev Racing and part of the Drive for Diversity program, and Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim have been the two drivers all season long in this Arca Menards series, and I know you raced in the Arca East as well, but just talk about, first of all, how challenging is it to race against those two drivers this season, and number two, was there anything that you learned from them throughout the season that maybe helped you get that victory at Kansas Speedway?
Yeah, you know, obviously they're two very good drivers, you know, and they perform at the top level. So I feel like, you know, it made me bring my best game to the track whenever I showed up. You know, I wouldn't say I learned anything from them. You know, I keep quiet to myself and, you know, I pick and choose, you know, what I want to take in as info. But, you know, I think I learned how to beat them. And, you know, learned what they did differently that I could capitalize on. And, you know, I definitely used that in Kansas, you know, especially passing Corey, you know, on that long run. You know, little bits and pieces that you learn from their driving styles throughout the course of the year that you could, you know, use against them. And I feel like, you know, that's what we did a little bit of. But, no, yeah, really elevated my game, you know, my racecraft racing with them this year.
Okay. Well, joining me now is our co-host for tonight, Sal Segala. First of all, Sal, I want to say welcome to you. Okay, I think Sal is with us.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm
not
right
hearing.
Out of your chair. Can you hear
oh,
me now?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear
you
now.
Yeah, I had to get all hooked up. Okay, dude,
oh, okay.
I had to right out of boat. But I know we only have Nick for a short time, so I guess let's just
yes.
get started with the with
okay,
the first of all,
so
Nick, congratulations.
I didn't know if you had any. You have some questions for Nick, Sal?
Yeah, I have a couple. I mean, it was an interesting win, and especially against a driver like Ty Gibbs, it just doesn't. I mean, you just don't beat him, especially on these mile and a half tracks like this, and you know, it's just, I mean, first of all, congratulations on the win. Let me congratulate you on the win first.
I appreciate it.
So, running, I don't know what Sharon's asked, so I'm going to try and ad-lib what Sharon didn't ask. I kind of have to let I know. But what was it like to steal a win? Well, actually not steal it. actually race for the win and take it from Ty Gibbs.
Yeah, you know, I feel like this year, you know, we've had a lot of opportunities to win, not by the fastest car, but like opportunities like this. You know, you go back Michigan, Charlotte, Winchester, but we've had really unfortunate incidents. You know, whether it be a tire going down, you know, a wreck that's out of our hands, or something like, you know, the power steering going out. And I feel like, you know, Kansas, it was almost that same position. It was almost like, you know, what could go wrong this time? But nothing went wrong, and, you know, I think that's why you saw us do what we do, you know. You know, we've been in position many times this year, but it just hasn't worked our way, and, you know, you saw at Kansas, you know, it did work our way. So I feel like, you know, kind of a change of fortune and all that stuff, but it feels really good, you know, especially for my guys. You know, they work so hard. They work so hard to make the cars as fast as they are, and they all deserve it.
You know, and actually racing for Rev Racing, we've had a lot of the, you know, different drivers who have gone to the program all the way back to, gosh, I mean, we go all the way back to, I think, Darrell Wallace and, you know, Sergio Pena and, you know, Ryan Vargas and all them. What's it like running for Max Siegel and the gang over there?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's an honor. You know, they have a very deep pedigree as far as diversity in the sport. And they've produced a lot of really good drivers. But I feel like, you know, this year is different. You know, they've never been on the stage they've been, you know, in the ARCA series. You know, you're racing at all the marquee events. And like I always tell people, you know, the tracks that matter in a driver's career, like Kansas, you know, just the big tracks, you know, that consists, you see most of the Cup schedule consist of. And, you know, this was their biggest win to date as far as, you know, the length of the track. And, you know, when you step up to a mile and a half, you know, you tackle a different challenge. You know, you're unloaded with so many more, you know, technical challenges and, you know, for the driver too. So for, you know, this young team, I guess you could call it, to perform the way they did on the big tracks, you know, it's a testament to what Max builds back at the shop and, you know, just the way he does things and, you know, we definitely would not be nearly as competitive as we would have without his support and, you know, without his, you know, constant support throughout the year and trying to improve the way we run. But, yeah, no, it's a testament to what he does.
You know, and it's I like one of the words you used, which was, you know, a young team, because, you know, as everybody knows at the Drive for Diversity program, you know what, every year, you know, you get new candidates out there, you know, and nobody really knows who's going to be called back. Nobody knows, you know, who's going to, you know, how many years you're going to run with them. You know, it's a year-to-year thing, you know what, and gosh, just, I mean, to think of, you know, to grab a win, especially at Kansas and against you know, Ty Gibbs, you know, who's been hot, you know, it shows the talent that you have as a driver, as Nick Sanchez has as a driver, you know, to be able to go out there and get the job done, you know, without, you know, blowing it on the last, you know, on the last restart, you know, and getting out there, you know, and doing what you had to do to get the win.
No, I appreciate it, and thank you.
And with that, you know, I'm just gonna say congratulations again. I got to get myself all together here. I just got back from a 5-hour trip, so I'm gonna turn it back over to Sharon.
Okay, Nick. I want to get into an announcement that you guys made. You guys, I mean, yourself and Roger Carruth, your teammate there at Rev Racing, about racing part-time in the Xfinity Series for next season, as well as running a full-time season in the ARCA Menards Series and contending for that championship next year. Talk about how that came about.
Yeah, you know, I think it – you know, it's been something that I've been working on before this season started, you know, obviously, you know, the next step in my career, and, you know, I've worked endlessly and really hard on it, but, you know, it's nice to finally see it come together. But yeah, no, I'm really excited to be running for BJ next year in the Xfinity Series. You know, I look at that team, you know, as another up and coming team, and, you know, I feel like their performance strides are going to be big. And, you know, I'm really happy to be a part of their growth for next year and, you know, hopefully in the future.
Absolutely. BJ McLeod, he's really done a great job developing his organization. And a lot of people see that as kind of a developmental team to help you take that next step in your career. And have you thought about, did you weigh the pros and cons over the truck series and the Xfinity series?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, from a brand standpoint, you know, a sponsorship perspective, Xfinity series is a no-brainer. You know, the truck series, you know, they have a lot of great competitors, and it is really a good series. But, you know, from that standpoint, you just get a lot more out of it in the Xfinity series. And I feel like, you know, the longer races and just the Xfinity car package in general, you know, people praise it as the best racing in NASCAR, and, you know, they're not wrong. You know, the way it races, you know, the durability of the car. You just don't see that with the trucks, and that was obviously another deciding factor.
Okay, another driver, and I think I've asked you this question before, Nick, but I'm going to ask it again in case there's somebody listening tonight that didn't hear our interview from before. But Daniel Suarez has come up through the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program and Rev Racing. Have you had a chance to talk with him about his progression up that NASCAR ladder?
Oh, no, you know, I've never talked to him one-on-one about it. Obviously, I know his story. You know, I was really good friends with Ruben Garcia. That was a mutual friends with him. But no, I've never talked to him one-on-one.
Oh, okay. That would be great to have that opportunity, I'm sure. You know, we're just so proud of you there at Rev Racing and what you're doing in the Drive for Diversity program. This is not your first season with Rev Racing. You've been with them for a few years now. And so I'm glad to see that you're going to be back in the Arkham and Knight series, because I think you're going to be a title contender next year. But I'm also happy to see you racing part-time in the Arkham, in the Xfinity series with BJ McLeod next year. Talk a little bit about racing for that championship next year with Rev Racing and the Drive for Diversity program and what they do to support you in that endeavor.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll have a pretty good shot. You know, it's what I've learned from this year. It's all about, you know, minimizing mistakes and minimizing bad things out of your control. You know, we've had a lot of those this year. But yeah, you know, I think my team is going to get a lot stronger from this win and, you know, from everything we've learned this year. And, you know, I hope to put it all together a little better next year and try to contend for a championship.
All right. Now, Nick, we know the driver is the guy out front, the guy who drives the car, but there's a lot of people behind you, behind the scenes. I'm going to give you a moment here to kind of recognize some of those folks behind the scenes that have helped bring Nick Sanchez to where he is today.
Yeah, you know, obviously Rev Racing, team owner Max Siegel, and, you know, everyone from NASCAR and the NASCAR Drive for Diversity that makes this program possible. You know, my parents have obviously played a big role in what I do. You know, those are the biggest people I want to thank. Yeah, you know, obviously without those people, I would not be here.
Okay. Are you going to have the same team next year in the Arkham and Art Series?
Yeah, you know, obviously little things here and there change, but we're going to have the same group of guys and, you know, hopefully add on a little more to our team, create some more depth.
Okay. Well, we're going to look forward to watching you next season. And, again, congratulations to you on your victory. I think it's the first of many. The hardest one to get is that first one. So hopefully you can carry that momentum into next season.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Always a pleasure, Nick Sanchez. And we look forward to perhaps talking with you again sometime next season.
Awesome. Same here. Thank you.
Okay. Take care now. Okay, folks. That was Nick Sanchez. He was the winner of the Arkham and Art Series season finale at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. And what a finish it was. Six laps to go. They get a caution. They've got the green, white checkered flag. And the two leaders, Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim, fighting for position. And Nick Sanchez just drops below both of them and takes that lead. How exciting is that, Sal?
Oh, yeah, you ain't going to get it no more exciting than that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, all the drivers looking around, you know, are probably thinking, where did he come from? But, you know, that's how the, you know, that's how it works out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I liked what Nick said there because I think this was before you came on. Yeah, I asked him the question of what did he learn from racing with Corey Heim and Ty Gibson. He said he didn't learn so much about too much from them personally, but he said that what happened from watching them race, but what he learned from watching them race is how to beat them. And that's exactly what he did. He said, you know, well, you did hear this. There were a lot of things that went wrong before he got to the point that everything went right. And so, you know, that was, I thought, a great insight on Nick Sanchez.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's, you know what, and when you talk to, let me see, this is our, this is our 6:30 call-in. He's just confirming. All right.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you know what, and when you talk to a lot of drivers, you know, like around, you know, the short tracks, you know, a lot of them will say, you know, they'll do their practice, you know, like when, say, for example, like when Derek Thorne goes out, you know, drivers will try and do their practice to get in behind him, you know, to see what line he runs, you know, see how he goes around the track, you know, see what makes him fast. You know, and a lot of drivers, you know, they'll look to that, you know, especially, you know, the more seasoned drivers, you know, if they're a little bit younger, you know, coming up.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to our review of the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Kansas Speedway. But before we do that, I just want to let you know their next race is the Dead On Tools 250 at Martinsville Speedway on Saturday, October the 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So that race will be on NBC Sports Network as well as MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. But now we really want to talk about the race that took place this past Saturday at Kansas Speedway. Ty Gibbs overcomes a speeding penalty to win the Xfinity Series race at Kansas for his 11th victory of 2021 for the number 54 car. Now, Ty Gibbs continued his phenomenal NASCAR Xfinity Series rookie season on Saturday with his fourth victory of the year in the Kansas Lottery 300 at Kansas Speedway. Now, he had that speeding penalty on pit road earlier in the race, but he rebounded to take the lead with just 10 laps to go en route to the victory in the Xfinity Series race. It's Gibbs' fourth win in 17 starts. That's incredible. The number 22 of Austin Cindric finished second. He held off A.J. Allmendinger, who had fresher tires late in the race. Justin Haley salvaged a fourth-place finish after spending much of the afternoon outside the top 10. Then it was Ryan Sieg rounding out the top five, earning his first top 10 finish since Talladega in April. Brett Moffitt put on fresh tires late to finish sixth. Meanwhile, Michael Annette, Sam Mayer, Justin Allgaier, and Maya Snyder made up the rest of the top 10 drivers. Playoff drivers Noah Gragson, Harrison Burton were caught up in a three-car wreck with 20 laps to go, which started when Mayer tagged the left rear corner panel of Burton. Allmendinger won the opening stage, while Cindric earned 10 points by winning the second stage, and each driver will have 11 stage wins on the season. There were 19 lead changes among six drivers and 10 cautions for 46 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 112.641 miles per hour. Ty Gibbs won the 21st annual Kansas Lottery 300 for his fourth victory in 18 races, his fourth victory in 10th top 10 finish in 2021, and his first victory and first top 10 finish in his only race at Kansas Speedway. Austin Cindric posted his second top 10 finish in six races at Kansas, and it's his 24th top 10 finish this season. AJ Allmendinger posted his first top 10 finish in three races at Kansas, while Ty Gibbs was the highest finishing rookie of the race as the leader. So we'll go over the points here in just a minute, but before we do that, I want to get your thoughts, Sal, about these race results. Are we still here, Sal?
Yeah, I'm here. I had to put outside it while you guys were finishing up the last. Yeah, you know, Ty gets an amazing win. And, you know, it's, you know, after he almost swept his Kansas weekend. Getting close.
I know. He hasn't raced the whole season. He's only raced a few races this entire season and has four victories in the series. As a rookie, it's just phenomenal.
It is, you know, and the thing is, you know, you can't take nothing away from the kid. He works hard. Sure, he's got good equipment, but then so do we. Can go to you know, a bunch of other drivers, you know, who've had the same you know, the same opportunity, the same equipment, you know, but it's just he just you know, he took advantage of what he's had, you know. And he's worked hard. I mean, you know, nobody, it's kind of hard to say because nobody really knows how hard he works away from the track. You know, there's not
true.
That, you know,
but just like Nick Sanchez, Ty Gibbs beat Austin Cedric and AJ Allmendinger, two of the best in the Xfinity series.
Exactly. And it's just, you know, just it's a testament, you know, to like I said, we don't know how hard the kid is working. Obviously, he's working very hard, probably on the simulator, you know, doing a lot of sim racing and watching a lot of film, and probably talking a lot to, you know, Danny, Kyle, and and Martin, you know, about, you know, how to, you know, get around tracks, how to race. I mean, it's just the kid is it's phenomenal what he's doing. The amount of wins
he's
picked up through everything he's raced this year.
10 wins in the Arkham and Arch series, 4 wins in the ARCA series. That's 14 wins right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
Okay, we mentioned Harrison Burton and Noah Gregson got caught up in an incident with Sam Mayer. They ended up finishing in 34th and 35th place due to the accident. Mason Massey and Jake Buford also ended up in accidents. They finished 37th and 38th. Also, Greg Alding had an engine issue, giving him a 39th place finish, and Joey Gase, an electrical issue, causing him to finish in last place. The margin of victory was 0.759 seconds for these guys. And then let's see, Daniel Hemric ended up with a 15th place finish. Brandon Jones finished in 11th, but all the other four playoff players finished in that top 10, including Austin Cindric, Allmendinger, and Justin Haley finishing second, third, and fourth. And then Justin Allgaier finishing in 9th place. Let's go ahead and cover the points here for these guys. Do you have the points up?
Yeah, I'm right here. We got driver points.
Okay.
Do we have driver points? Okay, so far we got Austin Cedric still needing the points. AJ Allmendinger in second. Justin Allgaier in third. Daniel Hemric in fourth. And below the cut line right now is Justin Haley, Noah Gregson, Brandon Jones, and Harrison Burton, all below the cut line with one race to go. At we're at Martinsville. Is it Martinsville this weekend?
Yes, Martinsville is this weekend, and that's
elimination
race.
And this elimination race this week. So Noah's. Basically, Justin has a shot, him and Daniel Hemric, but then when you go down to Noah, Brandon, and Harrison, they're all in must-win situations if they're going to make the
I agree.
The playoffs.
But Austin Cindric and J.J. Allmendinger, they're just a point apart. They're really in a virtual tie at 31-39 points each. Justin Allgaier's at 31-01 points. And Daniel Hemric at 30-99. So he's 40 points back, while Justin Allgaier is 38 points back. And then going below that cut line, just 7 points behind Daniel Hemric is Justin Haley, and another 10 points behind him is Noah Gregson. So, yeah, those four drivers are really going to be fighting for those last two spots, I think, for Phoenix Raceway. And, wow, what a place to fight for it at Martinsville, where everybody's bumping and banging already.
Exactly. You know, it's going to be it's going to be a really good race. You know, your race fans don't want to miss it. Don't want to miss this one. There's a lot up at stake.
There is a lot at stake. Again, that cut line, there's really about four drivers competing for two spots. And, you know, Brandon Jones or Harrison Burton could technically come up with a win at Martinsville and put themselves in, which would put, like, Daniel Hemric below the line. That would just be such a shame, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, it would. It's going to be...
It's going to be hard, because you don't want to see...
Go ahead.
It'd be nice to see all of them go there, but only four drivers can be in the final four.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of ironic that here we have... with the exception of Brandon Jones and Harrison Burton, but Daniel Hemric is looking to possibly make the playoffs with zero wins.
Yes. That's true.
Wouldn't that be something if he won the championship with zero wins? He gets his first ever Xfinity Series win at Phoenix for the championship. Boy, wouldn't that be a story.
Is that your prediction?
No, yeah. That's not my prediction. Nah. I'm just saying that would be something. I think my prediction would be A.J. Allmendinger for the championship this year.
Ah, okay. A.J. Allmendinger has certainly put on a show here, especially in the second part of this season and during the playoffs. He's been super strong. So, yeah, it's hard to, you know, either one of those guys I think could do it, Austin Cindric or A.J. Allmendinger. But, you got to kind of give it to it's kind of up for grabs. Either one of them could do it. But since you said A.J., I'm going to say Austin Cindric. Who's going to win at Martinsville?
I don't know. That's a tough pick.
We know somebody's going to leave happy, and we know somebody else is going to leave not so happy.
I mean, if Ty Gibbs is one of the ones running, you almost have to go at Ty. He's just that kind of a driver.
Well,
but I would have to put it on AJ too, because I think AJ is really gonna go out there to make a statement. You know, and roll with a lot of momentum into going to Phoenix.
Okay, well, Josh Berry, I know, is going to be in the 31, Natalie Decker in the 23, just to mention some of that. Yeah, Ty Gibbs is going to be in the number 54, so he is going to be in that race.
Yeah, I figured he would be.
Preston Pardis, Akinori Ogata is going to be in that 178, and Ryan Ellis is going to be driving the 199 this weekend for BJ McLeod Motorsports. So, yeah, that's going to be pretty exciting. But this is a short track racing. I know one driver, there's several drivers that are very good at short track racing. I'm going to say Justin Allgaier pulls off a victory.
And who's going to get Rookie of the Year?
Rookie of the Year? That's a good question. You almost got to go with Ty Gibbs.
If he qualifies for Rookie of the Year, if not, then it'll be Jade Buford, because he's got 30 starts. He's only one start, you know, away from doing the whole season. And I'm thinking that if they didn't let Ty Gibbs race for points, I don't think he'd be eligible for Rookie of the Year.
Okay.
Because other than that, it's Ryan Vargas with 27 starts, but Ryan Vargas is so far down from, you know, like 200-something points down, so that's not going to happen.
It's definitely going to be fun to watch when we go to Martinsville next weekend. Now let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series. Their next race is also at Martinsville, the Xfinity 500, 2 o'clock p.m. Sunday, October the 31st. And that race will be carried on NBC, no practice or qualifying. But again, we want to cover the Hollywood Casino 400 at Kansas Speedway last Sunday, October the 24th. Larson continues his domination in the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs, getting his third straight win at Kansas. He did heavy lifting on Sunday, leading 9 different times for a race-high 130 laps, ultimately crossing the finish line a hefty 3.619 seconds ahead of the field to earn the NASCAR Cup Series series best, 9th win of the season and the 15th of his career in the Hollywood Casino 400 at Kansas Speedway. It's his third consecutive win for the 29-year-old Californian and the second time this season that he's won 3 in a row. The last time a driver won 3 straight races twice in a season was in 1987 when the late 7-time champion Dale Earnhardt accomplished the feat. So that's a pretty big record to break. Kyle Larson won the race at Kansas Speedway for his 9th win of the year, the first win at Kansas in the 15th of his career. Elliott finished in second, followed by Kevin Harvick, Kurt Busch, Denny Hamlin, William Byron, Martin Truex Jr., Christopher Bell, Joey Logano, and Austin Dillon. Larson started from the pole. He led 130 of 267 laps, pulling away for the margin of victory of more than 3 seconds. Those several playoff drivers had trouble during the race, including Keselowski. He had a flat tire early and lost a couple of laps. He could only get back to 17th at the finish. Kyle Busch had flat tires and made contact with the outside wall. He finished 28th, 6 laps down. Blaney wrecked with 44 laps left, and he could not continue. He ended up finishing in 37th place. Stage 1 was won by Kyle Larson. Stage 2 was won by William Byron. There were 23 lead changes among 8 drivers and 7 cautions for 33 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 130.728 miles per hour. Kyle Larson won the 21st annual Hollywood Casino 400, again his 15th victory in 258 Cup Series races. It's his 9th victory and 25th top 10 finish this year. This is the first victory and 6th top 10 finish in 15 races at Kansas. Chase Elliott posted his 8th top 10 finish in 13 races at Kansas, and his 20th top 10 finish this year. Kevin Harvick posting his 19th top 10 finish in 33 races at Kansas Speedway. Chase Bristow, who finished 19th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Your thoughts about the race results, Sal?
Yeah, Kyle is really, he's really been an amazing driver this year. You know, if he doesn't win the championship, you know what? He needs to kick himself in the back of the head because he's just.
He is.
I mean,
on a momentum.
I know he's on a tear right now. I mean, he's got the momentum. He's got the momentum going, you know, into the into the last two races, you know, which will be Martinsville and he's been really strong at the mile and a half track. Let's see how he does at the mile track, which will be Phoenix. But and then Chase Elliott, man, Chase gave it all he had. I mean, hitting the wall, did all he could to try and get that to catch up to his teammate. But Chase showed a lot of heart, you know, and you know, of course, you know, Kevin right behind him, you know, and you know, all that Elliott Harvick stuff is already, it's done with. You know, I don't care what the fans, you know, they wanted to try and make a big old thing about it. You know, Kevin made his point, Chase made his point, you know what, and Kevin is so much of a professional, he's not going to try and knock him out of a chance to win a championship. You know, that's just not how Kevin, you know, how Harvick rolls, you know. If Chase is going to knock himself out of a champion, it's going to be because he does it on his own, not because Kevin goes and puts him into the wall. These guys are professionals, you know, and there's repercussions for stuff like that, you know. And gosh, I was just so disappointed in Brad and Kyle. I really thought Kyle was going to have a really good race. I thought Brad would have a strong finish, you know, especially, you know, going into team ownership next year, you know, with Jack Roush. But
yes,
you know, it's not to be.
Well, we'll see what the rest of the story is here. I will say, we mentioned Ryan Blaney having an accident that also involved Anthony Alfredo. Both of them were out on accidents. Justin Haley had an engine issue that caused him to finish in 39th place, and Chad Fincham had handling issues causing him to finish in 40th place. So, again, a really big race, again, for Kyle Larson, led in a commanding way, just dominant during these playoffs, and dominant in this race at Kansas Speedway as well. I can't wait till we get to Martinsville next weekend. I think it's going to be exciting racing. Let's cover the points, though, here for the Cup Series.
Okay, the points in the Cup Series, we got Kyle Larson leading the points still. Chase Elliott now in second. Denny Hamlin in third. Kyle Busch is still holding on to that fourth spot. Ryan Blaney, fifth. Martin Truex, sixth. Brad Keselowski, seventh. And eighth is Joey Logano.
Yes. It's amazing. Kyle Larson has a 74-point lead over second-place Chase Elliott. Denny Hamlin just 2 points behind Chase Elliott. And then Kyle Busch in that fourth spot. And he's 107 points back. But just 1 point behind him, below the cut line, is Ryan Blaney. 2 points between Ryan Blaney and Martin Truex. 3 points between Martin Truex and Brad Keselowski. And then 30 points between Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano. So Joey Logano's got the biggest hole there to climb out of. He's in a must-win situation at Martinsville.
I was just going to say that. Joey Logano's probably the only driver in a must-win situation because when you look at Larson's already in on the win. Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin. Two wins, yeah. Then you look at Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex Jr., and Brad Keselowski. There's only between Brad and Chase, there's only a 29 point difference. So Brad is, but see that's between Chase. You got to go to the fourth spot where Kyle Busch is. And he's only 6 points out of that fourth spot out of the bubble. So you're looking at Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex, Brad Keselowski, and Kyle Busch. Those are four drivers to watch because those are the ones. And actually,
yep.
Chase, too, because, you know, I mean, Chase is above there, but you know, Chase has a DNF. You know, he's gonna lose 20 something odd points, 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chase could easily drop out of the only one that's 100% sure is Kyle Larson because of his win.
Yep, that is so true. And you know, Martinsville, just being the type of track that it is, somebody's going to leave that track very unhappy with the results. I've got a feeling we might see a scuffle or two after this race, because these guys all want to be in that final four.
Oh yeah, it's going to be. Somebody's going to be hurt. There's going to be three drivers. Well, four. Joey Logano, because Joey Logano don't win. I'm sure he feels he has a shot at winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
well,
I mean, you know, he's going to be one of them.
Before. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So he could steal the show and come up with the victory and put somebody else out. So anyway, I think it's going to be very intense. I think a lot of these drivers are either going to be trying so hard to take care of their car and not get in trouble, and other cars are going to be willing to take the risk and do whatever they have to do to get that victory. So that spells trouble at Martinsville.
Yeah, it does. It sure does.
So any predictions?
I don't know. I think it's hard to say. I mean, you can look up and down the board. I'm not going to actually throw Kyle Larson, you know, for another win, even though it's very, very possible. But I'm going to look at maybe Kyle Busch, you know, putting that little act. I mean, he already drives at 150%. But I'm just going to look at him, really pushing it, to lock his spot in there. He doesn't want to be left out. None of them want to be left out. But
that is the truth.
You know, he has to protect that, you know, that 1 point lead he has over Ryan Blaney. So he's gonna, you know, I think he's gonna be doing what he has to do, you know, to make sure that he gets in there.
Okay, so we'll have to wait and see what happens next weekend. Jay and I will be previewing the show coming up on the top of the, you know, for this Thursday, we'll be previewing the races at Martinsville Speedway. And that's our next to the last race. The final race is coming up at Phoenix, and that will close the season out. We'll know who all of our champions are.
Yeah, that is so true.
So it's going to be pretty fun and exciting to see how this closes out at Martinsville, and then again the following week at Phoenix Raceway. They'll head to the west out there and run that season finale at Phoenix. Who's your prediction to win at Phoenix?
You know, it's going to be hard at Phoenix. So many drivers run well there. Kevin Harvick I think has the most wins out of all the Cup drivers. You know, and sometimes you got to look outside of who's actually in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you could have a non-playoff driver win that race. So
exactly.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, you could be looking at possibly, you know, Kevin Harvick, you know, getting his win, you know, there at Phoenix, you know, not really so much being the spoiler, because there's still four drivers, you know, that are going to be going for the for the championship.
Okay, and coming up, Sal, we have a guest coming on board, and I'm going to let you kind of tell us a little something about him, but I'm also going to let you kind of carry that interview while I prepare for Hot Topics, if you don't mind. Do you want to tell us a little something about the guest coming up?
Yeah, our next guest is coming up at the 6:30 hours. Is Kyle Keller. He's he's one of our locals out here in California, and he's had a very, very exciting season this year. Had a very exciting race this past weekend at Kern 2, you know, to be able to, you know, jump in a super late and race this track that, you know, everybody talks about. And, you know, and it wasn't an easy task, you know, so to speak. You know, they, you know, first they had to get out there, you know, in practice, and it seemed like they were struggling a little bit in practice, went up and qualified, but then ended up getting a fourth place win, you know, at the end of the night, you know, which on a track like Kern, especially the SRL series with the talent, the amount of drivers they have, it's, you know, it's really something, you know, that you can really hold your head up high at. Not too many drivers have gotten finishes like that, and I'm talking about some really good drivers, seasoned drivers, veteran drivers who struggle with this track. You know, Kyle went out there and handled it, you know, took care of business, and, you know, brought his car home and was able to do all that. But before that, you know, he had a really extraordinary season, winning a couple championships at Madera, and, you know, rode that, like I said, you know, rode that momentum here into Kern this past weekend for the SRL Southwest Tour race.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So he won the championship at Madera, but he's also racing in the SRL. Is that the season finale for SRL, Sal?
Yes. This Saturday was our last race of the season. So we crowned three champions. Yeah, we crowned three champions. We crowned our modified champion, and then the pro late champion, pro late model champion. And then, of course, then we crowned our Southwest Tour, our super late model champion this weekend.
And who were those guys?
Jeremy Doss ended up winning. Jeremy Doss won the modified race. Jeremy Doss also won the championship. Jeremy was running. Actually, he ran three cars this weekend, but he was only in the championship for two, and then in the SRL Southwest Pro Series, Pro Late Model Series, Jeremy won the race, and he also won the championship in that. And then in the Super Lates, which are the big boys, that's where Derek Thorne ended up winning the championship. Preston Peltier won the race, but when he went through tech, he was overweight on the left side. So he got DQ'd out of tech. Yeah, and lost he lost the bounty that they had on Derek, plus he lost the race win. So he had to give the trophy back, and then they gave it to Derek at the end of the night. So Derek ended up picking up something like $10,500 because he was also the half. He was also the leader at the halfway point.
Okay.
Of the race, so yeah, it was really a lot of good racing this past weekend.
Yeah, sounds like it. And I know we have a lot of drivers that come on the show, and especially here recently, that have told us that Derek Thorne has helped them as a mentor. As they develop into a racing career. And I think our guest is no different. It's good to see a champion like Derek Thorne doing that with all of these up-and-coming drivers and helping them find success as well.
Yeah, it is, you know, because there's going to come a time, you know, that Derek's going to hang up his helmet, you know, and, you know, what's Derek going to do? All Derek knows is racing. You know, so, you know, helping out, you know, kids, you know, up and coming young drivers, you know, like Kyle, and then even Jaden, who we've had on the show a couple of times, you know, helping him out too, you know, and to see, you know, where their careers will take them. It's not an easy road nowadays. I've talked to a lot of drivers, and because of COVID, sponsorship is really hard to come by, and it's not like, you know, like, I mean, I'm seeing three cars so far after the championship race are not racing next year because of sponsorship.
Okay. Well, your guest is here now, Sal, so go ahead and he's in the queue, and you can go ahead and introduce him and get started with the interview.
All right. Our next guest is Kyle Keller. He was ended up picking up the Madeira late model non-televised and the overall combined late model nut-up championship this year out here in Madeira, California. He did it on two nut-up wins, including the short track shootout, which I think paid like $10,000. And he also had, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he had like nine nut-up wins. Eight race Madeira late models, and gosh, Steven gave me all the everything. Oh, then he had a top five in a West car. I'm sorry, Kyle. I had a long drive out here. I'm barely getting on, and we just want to welcome you to the show. So, welcome to the show, and congratulations on your fourth place finish this past Saturday.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, can you run down exactly what you did at Madeira this weekend? I mean, not this weekend, but before the whole series. I know you're you won the two out of three championships, right?
Yeah, I almost got all three. I lost the third one by 20 points.
Wow. So you've been racing for a while now. I mean, you know, it's not like you just got in a car, you know, a couple of years ago with junior late models, but I mean, you've been around a long time through racing. Where did you get your start?
I got my start in racing when I was around four or five in a go-kart, and then I just started to move up slowly into a late model.
So how was the transition from the go-kart to the late model, and at what age did you make that transition into the late model?
Well, when I was around eight, I ran a Baron Dallaro, and then about 10 years old, we got a call from Kenny Shepard to do the junior late model series at Madeira, and that was my start into a late model, and then slowly moved up into the pro late models, and then ARCA, and then ran SRO at the Kern this weekend.
Now let's go back to the junior late models. That was a program that basically Kenny Shepard started at Madeira, and it was to bring up drivers as yourself, you know, to teach you guys, you know, how to race, you know, with the bigger car other than the legends, the Bandoleros, you know, and also, you know, along the way, you know, get the feel of what it's like to race, or, you know, on a bigger track, and then to have that camaraderie with drivers your age.
No, yeah, I was the inaugural junior late model series, so all us kids were around, you know, no older than 14, and we had no clue what to do, right? So, and the parents, it was pretty hard to try to help us kids because, you know, it was all our first time in a late model, and the junior late model series is way better than it was, and the time's definitely picked up since I've raced, so I think that the season of the junior late models is progression is really, really good.
You know, and your parents have been around since day one of your you know, when you first started racing. Now, like I said, coming to the junior late models, who else was there besides your dad, you know, to help you set up the car, you know, and kind of help you, you know, with, you know, get the feel of the track, you know, kind of show you, you know, where the racing lines are and stuff like that?
I think it was just, you know, we had Brian Kaiser, actually. He was big help in the junior late models when I first started, him and his sons. They were my crew chief. He was my crew chief this weekend, and they were my crew this weekend at SRL. But they kind of got me started in late models in the junior late model series, and then they stepped away to do some, you know, they worked at the racetrack and stuff like that, the bull ring. So they kind of stepped away from being a race team, and they came back again. So, but the Kaisers were big help in my junior late model series.
So making the transition from you know, the junior late models, you know, into what they're calling now the pro late model series, how hard is it to make the transition? Because now you're talking about a car, you know, that I'm sure it handles different, plus you have more horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, you can do the open motor package or the crate motor package, but back in the Junior Late models, there I don't think there was such thing as a crate motor yet, so it was all open motors, so we already had the feeling of what the horsepower is, and now it's pretty much the winning car is a crate motor, so definitely horsepower has went down since Junior Late models for me, but, I mean, the handling is really, really different. You know, there's no restrictor plate, so you definitely got to get on the gas. A little bit later, and the Prolate models, the drivers are all under within 0.2, since where the juniors are all over the place on time wise.
So what was it like running the series out there? And was that the only track that you ran? You know, once you came into Prolates, was the only track you ran Madera, or did you run any other tracks?
When I ran Prolate models for the last couple of years, I ran Kern a couple of times. I think I finished third one time in the Prolate model. And then I ran Vegas and won Vegas a couple times in a Prolate model, and mainly Madera. I think we did like 22 races this year at Madera.
So what's the biggest difference between the three tracks that you have run between the Bullring, Kern, and Madera?
Madera is just more of a momentum track. You got to make sure you don't mess up at all because, you know, if you mess up just a tiny bit, that they'll gain really close on you. But in Vegas, if you mess up a little bit, you still have a bigger track to try to, you know, regain the speed that you have. And if they're a little farther back, it's harder for them to catch you because Vegas is a pretty even racetrack.
So running these three tracks, what did you take from each track, to run the next one, since most of your racing was done at Madera, let's go this route. What did you take from Kern, and what did you take from the Bullring, to be able to be more competitive at Madera, which is where you're running for the championships at?
Vegas and Kern, the speed difference is really different. I mean, it's a 3/8 mile and a half mile at Vegas and Kern, where it's only a 1/3 mile at Madera. So the speed is different. So, it's not as hard to try to, actually keep the speed up at Vegas and Kern. You're barely on the brake pedal and you're mostly on the gas, where Madera, you got to be on the brake a little bit more, and it's just, not as fast. So it's kind of easier to, it's like, it's easier to feel the race car and make sure you hit your lap perfect every time, where Vegas and Kern, if you mess up, it's kind of hard to regain from that.
So once you made the transition from the junior, back into the Prolates, was there any other help, outside help that you got, maybe crew chief, maybe driver coaches, that came in, to help you, to kind of, to kind of put you to where you're at today to be able to make that start this past weekend at Kern?
Oh, this weekend wouldn't have been possible without my entire crew back home. My dad, Uncle John, Brian Taylor, and definitely Chuck Wall. If they didn't get that car done, we wouldn't have been able to make Kern. But lately this year in the Prolate models, it's been Derek Thorne that's been coming on board and kind of driver coaching me and being my crew chief in the Prolate models at Madera. But Kern this weekend, we were driver development driver for Derek Thorne and Mike Keane and stuff like that. But this weekend wouldn't have been possible without Chuck Wall and my whole team back at home.
So what's it like working with a driver like Derek, with all the success he's had, throughout the years, with the championships, in both SRL, I still call it the old K&N. I don't know what calls it, ARCA series, but I call it K&N because when he won it, it was a K&N series, plus, the Snowflake winner, and all the other races, he's picked up wins in between all that.
No, yeah, it's definitely good because, he's older, and this past year I've kind of looked up to him, and I can definitely, like this weekend at Kern, I went over and, asked for advice because, he's just one of the top drivers anywhere he goes, and it's very easy to go to Derek and get advice and get what you're really asking for. and can go back out on the racetrack and actually gain time from actually his advice, where you can ask different people and you don't really pick up much time for what they tell you.
So then here's a million-dollar question. Do you think Derek holds back a little bit, or do you think he gives you everything that he knows?
You know, that would be a question for you to ask him, but I think as a driver, he's
yeah.
given me everything.
Yeah, he has. He's a really good guy, and I've seen the way he interacts, you know, especially with the younger drivers. You know, I know he wants to see everybody. Compete. He wants everybody, be successful, which is the big thing, you know. And having him on your side, you know, I'm sure that's been a big confidence booster.
No, yeah, I think that this year has definitely improved for us as a team. We started off slow, and Derek Thorne, he came on board, and our team really shot off.
So going into Kern, what was it that made you decide to race race a super late and not bring your pro late model out and race that instead?
Well, after the $10,000 win race, we sold our car to Robbie Keneally. They bought our race car, so he's going to run that next year as a junior late model at Madera. But the $10,000 definitely helped us out, so we bought ourselves a Fury. And we wanted to try something different. You know, I wanted to try to move up in the ranks a little bit and run against better competition. And I think the drivers in SRL are the best on the West Coast. So finishing fourth, I think we did really good as a small team.
So when you go out for your first practice, you know, in the super late, you know, especially track the size of Kern, you know, the speeds that it carries, you know, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of racing there in the past. You know, you see some pretty crazy stuff. What was it like, you know, as a young up and coming driver, you know, to get out there, you know, and you know, when you started first making laps around the track?
No, yeah, the speed, it's very fast compared to what I've raced. I ran ARCA at Kern, but Supers are way faster down the straightaway because they're just a lighter race car, but the speeds are different. You're definitely driving it in a ton. You wouldn't think you'd drive it in that fast going in the corner, but you definitely have to drive it in really far in order to have a good time.
You know, so then, you know, your, you know, Friday night practice comes around, you know, you're all finished, and then, you know, Saturday you get up, you know, and you got the one practice, you got to qualify. You know, like you said, you know, you're running against some of the best drivers out there on the West Coast. How much pressure was on you when you got in the car, you know, to go out there and qualify, you know, because I know you qualify and you always want to turn your best. That's when you want to turn your best, you know, you don't want to start in the back, you know. You know, you always want to be in the top eight, you know, at least have a chance, you know, to get that invert.
No, yeah, I mean, I wasn't nervous much. The only thing I could have been nervous about was our car was fighting tightness all weekend, and we couldn't figure it out. Our travels just weren't right on our side this past weekend, and we finally got it fixed for qualifying, and it cut really, really good in qualifying, and I wasn't expecting it to happen. So I didn't get on the gas as much as I really should have, and, you know, I think I lost a couple tenths just in that in qualifying, but I still qualified 15th, and it was a very tight field.
So when it comes to working on the car, how much time do you – because I know Derek spends a lot of time working on his own car. He knows his car inside and out. He knows every bolt. He knows every screw. He knows every washer that's on that car. How much time do you spend, you know, on the you know, away from the track, working on your own car? Because I know you guys are – You're a single car team, you know, and it sounds like your family is. I see your dad at all the races, so I figure he's part of the process too.
No, yeah, I mean, back at home we just have my uncle and my dad, Chuck Wall, and one of my crew guys, Brian Taylor. It's just us back at the shop, and they spent countless hours trying to put a motor in. Couldn't find the right spot with the Fury. It's very tight to get out. We had a Ford McGonagall, so it's pretty hard to get the motor in perfect. So it spent hours trying to get that in, and you know, the car was pretty much set up already by Derek Thorne, and we just, you know, we had to get the motor in and driver, you know, like me comfortable. And this past weekend, we didn't really do much besides trying to get our travels right. That's what we were fighting most of the weekend. But, you know, the setup was good. Just besides the travels, it wasn't traveling right in the front end, causing us to be tight. But back to the Prolate models this year, we actually left the car back in California at the Keneally's house and just showed up the racetrack and cleaned the car and just went on the racetrack. The car was a bullet all year, and I think we made very few changes all year in the Prolate model.
So how much different was it racing a super late on that, on Kern, you know, as compared, you know, to running, you know, pro late, you know, at, you know, you said, you know, that you had ran the pro late at Kern race. So how much difference was it, you know, running against, you know, guys like Derek, you know, Preston Peltier and Jacob and them?
I feel the pro late models in my eyes is more loose of a race car at Kern, also the speed difference and pretty much everything like that. And it's also very tight field in SRL and the supers compared to the Prolate models in my eyes too. I think it's very, very hard to, you know, even finish in the top five in SRL. Everybody's, you know, really, really close, but all those people in front of me were actually blowing tires, I think. And that was able for me to drive by them because we were saving our car that second 75, but we also lost a cylinder, so we were only running on seven cylinders, but it was really easy to control that. I was able to be full throttle in the center when everybody was, you know, having to throttle their car off the corner.
You know, and actually it was a huge testament, you know, to your talent, you know, to, you know, the time that you put into your racing, you know, to be the, you know, the top finishing, to be the top finishing rookie out there, because usually it was always Buddy Shepard, you know, in the top three, you know, and also who else was out there as a rookie? Yeah, I think it was just Buddy. Oh, and Cole, I forgot Cole Raz and Cole Raz too, you know, but to finish, you know, in the top four position, you know, just right below Dan Holtz and, you know, Jeremy and Derek had to have a feel of huge accomplishment.
No, yeah, I mean, we qualified 15th, right, in the heat race and finished third. So we started 12th in the main event, and by the first half, I think we were still in 12th. We made it up to the top 10, and then I had a bad restart on the last restart. But when we went green for the second half, I keyed the radio, and I felt like I just had no power down the straightaway. But then after the race, we found out that we were only on seven cylinders. So it was definitely hard to try to keep up with them, but on the long run we were right there at the end because our car just wasn't as fast as everybody else's, so we weren't pushing our car that hard. But who knows, if we actually had eight cylinders and we had our full motor, who knows if we could have probably had something for Derek and them.
So looking forward into the 2022 season, do you have any plans set, or are you still up in the air, you know, about what, you know, what you're gonna see at the, you know, you know, what series you're going to run, or, you know, what's going to happen with Kyle Keller?
Like I heard you guys talking earlier before I came on the show, you know, COVID kind of hit all the drivers with sponsorship money and everything like that. But our ultimate goal is to run ARCA full time for a rookie and a championship in the West. But if that's not possible, we want to, you know, try to travel in the super late model, like go try to hit the slinger track and tracks back east. I want to travel all over the place next year, not just stay on the West Coast.
Okay. Kyle, is there any shout outs you want to give to, you know, to your team members, to any sponsors you have?
Yeah, I'd like to thank all my sponsors that helped me this year: Battleborn Racing, Heroes Environmental, Farmers Insurance, All-Star Towing, CSM Graphics, the Bohannon Family Trust, my manager, Steve Bohannon, Mojave Construction, KKR, Derek Thorne Racing, Competition Carburetors, Aqua Perfect, Swift Springs, Cornwell Mike, Keller Motorsports, and Bill and Alexia Conger.
Awesome. And, you know, Kyle, good luck. You know, if you have any more races coming up, you know, before the end of the season, I know I know we still have the Vegas race that's coming up on November 2nd. And if you happen to get in there, you know, good luck on that. And I guess have a nice off season, and hopefully, you know, we get you back on the, you know, on the show, you know, when the new season starts.
Yeah, thank you for having me tonight.
Okay. Thanks, and good night.
Good night.
Okay. That was a great interview, Sal, and it was good to get to know this young man a little bit better, Kyle Keller, a two-time champion at Madera Speedway.
Yes, actually three-time champion.
Three-time champion. Okay.
Yeah, he was a junior late model champion too. So, but
oh, gotcha.
You know, it's just a testament, you know, of how these young drivers, you know, how they progress, you know, and I mean to come out and finish fourth at Curd in the SRL race. Doesn't matter how you got there. You got the fourth place. You finished in front of 20 other cars. That's all that matters. You know what? And he went out there. He worked hard. Drove hard, and I'll tell you, it was impressive.
Well, it sounds like it. Okay,
yeah.
We're going to go ahead now and move on to a few updates that we want to do before we close out the show. And that is the trucks did not race. In fact, they've been off for a few weeks. It seems like forever at this point. Their last race was at Talladega Super Speedway in the first part of the month. But next week, they will be back on the track for the elimination race at Martinsville Speedway, the United Rentals 200, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday, October the 30th. Expect the green flag at sometime around 1:15, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Exciting race coming up here for that truck series.
Yes, it is. It's going to be once again, we're looking at, you know, at some must-win situations from a few drivers, but a lot of surprises shared from some of the drivers that we figured, you know, would be, you know, kind of, you know, up a little bit higher
in the running,
in the standings, mm-hmm. but in the running, yeah, and just having, you know, man, just having, you know, problems, you know, during this year's chase.
Yes, indeed. But we do have two rookies that are in the top eight. They're in the bottom four right now, but you never know. One of them could pull off a win at a short track like Martinsville.
Exactly. You know what? You never know what's going to happen in Martinsville. But then you have a couple of – you have a veteran, you know, that's right there, you know, possibly could get put out, you know, that's also going to be looking, you know, to grab that win. You know, he's going to be looking more for the win than – sure, he's going to be points racing, but I think Matt Crafton is really going to be, he wants to make a statement, you know, and he's really going to go out there and he wants to be in that top four when he gets to Phoenix the following week.
Absolutely. Now, the four drivers above the cut line, John Hunter Nemechek, Ben Rhodes, just 1 point apart in first and second. Then it's Matt Crafton and Sheldon Creed. They're just 5 points apart. And below the cut line, we have Stuart Friesen, Chandler Smith, and Carson Hocevar, the two rookies, and then Zane Smith in the eighth spot. So this is going to be an interesting race because any one of them could win at Martinsville and put themselves right into that top four. What are your predictions here for the truck series?
You know, It's tough, but I think John Hunter Nemechek might end up grabbing the win. Matt Crafton might end up to be another possible scenario like Daniel Hamrick, you know, not having a win, making the chase and possibly, you know, being the champion, you know, coming out of Phoenix. And it'll still be a race win. I mean, if he wins a race, you know, of course, when he'll finish higher, he finishes second, you know, a non-chase driver. But I think Matt's going to be he has to be one of the favorites out there, and Sheldon just hasn't had the season that he had last year. He's just man, he's just he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And Stuart Friesen is right there, 5 points behind, getting ready to, you know, to put the finishing punch on Sheldon Creed and knock him out, you know, and grab that fourth spot. And Sheldon ain't going to be, he's not going to go down without a fight. So it's going to be a close one right there between Sheldon and Stuart Friesen for that, last. And actually for Matt Crafton too, you know, he wants that, he wants to win. He wants to make the championship. He wants another championship. I mean, he's not getting any younger, and who knows how many more years we're going to see Matt Crafton unless he pulls a Ron Hornaday Jr. in races, you know, or Michael Waltrip in races until they're grandparents.
Yep. Okay, in the Arca Menard series, we have three championships down and one more left to go. Sammy Smith winning the East Championship, Ty Gibbs winning the Sioux Chief Showdown, as well as the Arca Menard Series Championship. And now the season finale coming up, the Arizona Lottery 100 on November the 6th, noon Mountain Time. That would be 3 o'clock Eastern Time at Phoenix Raceway coming up. So that will be part of our Phoenix preview next week as we wind down the season. That's going to be the final race of the season.
Yes, it is, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of talk at the track this weekend on who's going to pull it off. You know, Joey East is right there. Paul Petroselli is 1 point down. Jake Drew is 3. Joey East is 5, and Colmore is 6. But Trevor Huddleston, if he can finish above those 5 guys, Trevor has an outside shot at grabbing this championship.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have, I think we're going to have about 30 cars.
Mm-hmm.
So if Trevor can grab a win and hope that these other guys, you know, finish below him, you know, way below him, you know, like, you know, having issues, Trevor could be an outside shot at the championship. But really what it boils down to Cole Moore, Joey East, Jake Drew, and Paul Petroselli and Jesse Love. You know, they're all single digits, you know, as far as points, you know, they're single digits away, but it's going to be a good one.
It is. Any predictions?
I was Paul Petroselli kind of snuck in there. He was real quiet through the season and managed to, you know, he got the win at All American Speedway. But he's been real quiet. Jesse Love, I just don't see any momentum from him, you know, to be able to wrap this one up. Jake Drew has been good. You know, he's been consistent. He's put himself in a position, you know, to win a championship. I don't know. And Joey East, he's tough. He's good. But I don't know. I just see something out of Jake that I have a feeling this is going to be the race where he's going to put it all together. You know what, and he's gonna finish up on top. And Jake is a really super clean driver. Jake is not the type of driver, you know, that'll put a bumper to somebody, you know, to win a race or win a championship. I've talked to him a couple of times, you know, about it, you know, and I said, Jake, when you get to Phoenix, if you're there and you have a chance to put a bumper into Jesse Love or whoever it may be, you know, for it. He goes, unless they race me dirty, he goes, I'll race them dirty. He goes, I can't take a championship like that. He goes, I have to be clean, you know. So
good deal.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting, you know, because I'm curious on what the entry list is going to consist of. I'm pretty sure.
Are you going out to Phoenix?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm still recovering. I need to be 100% when the Snowball Derby comes around in December.
Gotcha.
I got 6 weeks, and I'm not going to go throw it away on spending, you know, 4 days over and 3 days over in Phoenix. I'd rather just, you know, stay home, get ready, and be ready for Snowball Derby.
Okay. Well, we're at the top of the hour, Sal, and so it's time to bid our adieus. But thank you so much for being here tonight. As usual, it was fun. We had two guests, just like our usual routine here, and really had a good time.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. You guys have a good, safe weekend. And make sure you get a lot of candy. This is Halloween weekend, so be safe out there. And, you know, wear your costume, scare the kids before you give them the candy. You know, do all that good stuff like that. And we'll talk to you guys next Monday. All right.
Oh,
good
okay.
Night.
Good night, Sal. Take care.
Okay.
All right. It is 1 minute past the top of the hour, and so we are definitely ready for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining us for tonight's show is, we'll start off with Michael Ozell. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, it's been about 2 weeks, but it's good to say hey-o to everybody.
Yes, indeed. Also joining us is Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
No, always so happy that you're available when I know the guys have really unusual schedules, so we're never quite sure where we're going to need you, but you're always available to help us out. We appreciate that. I know Jay is coming up along. He said he's going to be here, but he might be a few minutes late. So we'll go ahead and get started. Mike, I'm going to have you kick us off with the first hot topic. And then, Tommy, you can respond.
Well, hopefully Jay is going to get here in time to get in on this because I'm interested to hear his opinion. But as pretty much everybody knows, Formula One had their big race weekend this past weekend in Austin, Texas at COTA. The official TV ratings aren't in, but the attendance numbers, it sounds like they brought in somewhere around 400,000 people to COTA in attendance at the racetrack over the course of their race weekend. And there were several articles, NASCAR and NBC and Jenna Fryer both put out articles kind of highlighting about how, to put it bluntly, NASCAR got their butts kicked this weekend and what NASCAR can do to get the momentum and enthusiasm back to get the attendance back up at the races as well as the TV broadcast ratings to go up as well. So I'm interested to hear what people's take is on that with regards to just this weekend in particular and what the way forward might look like.
Okay, tell me your thoughts.
I did not see the F1 race at all at Circuit of Americas, but I do know from what I saw on Twitter that it was buzzing. I actually saw where somebody that I went to college with went to the Cutter race, so I thought that was pretty cool. But, yeah, there was a lot of people there, a lot of celebrities. I saw Shaq and Megan Thee Stallion were there. Yeah, it looked crazy. It looked packed. It looked packed. And compared to how Kansas Speedway looked and how Texas looked last week, yeah, it was pretty bad. But to make it a little bit more exciting, though, we now know the potential of COTA, and maybe NASCAR can look into, I don't know, whatever F1's doing with that road course. Because, well, the rain happened this year at that track, and that was a big factor in that race. But I would still like NASCAR to go back to that track. And Austin is a hot spot right now in America, so it just makes sense to go to that track. But, yeah, the F1 race was absolutely crazy. And I saw where the Netflix docuseries had something to do with the interest in F1 now in America. And, of course, NASCAR did the thing with Kevin James. But not that he's not funny, but maybe they should do – well, I know they were going to do that playoff thing this year, but I don't know. Didn't they decide to not do it for some reason, or are they still doing it, but they're just going to release it at a different time? Either way, NASCAR should look into doing some with Netflix. Whatever it is to gather interest, like these other races are doing, like F1. But, yeah, NASCAR needs to figure out something, cause Kansas and Texas versus what just happened at COTA this weekend for F1 was it was pretty bad. It was pretty obvious, too.
Okay. Let me see if Jay is here real quick. Jay is not here yet, so I guess I'll kind of chime in here. Yeah, I kind of agree. NASCAR did try that, The Crew, I think it was, that was on Netflix. It was a sitcom. I don't know what the ratings were on that. But, yeah, there's – and I know that they're working on some things, but it needs to come out sooner rather than later. So I would like to see NASCAR do a different kind of promotion to build drama versus what they've been doing. And I think they would get better results. A lot of people that place was packed for the F1 race. And F1 has not been a sport that NASCAR's had to worry about in the past. So for them to do that well at COTA this year speaks a lot. However, I will say this. What NASCAR had going against them, because I was in Texas, and I would have gone to the COTA race had it not been for the rain. So the rain really put a damper on what NASCAR could do at COTA when they were there in May. But they were up against one of the round of eight races, the middle race of the round of eight at Kansas Speedway, and it just did not live up to the same kind of hype that the F1 was getting at COTA. So, yeah, there's more that NASCAR needs to do, and what exactly that is, I don't know. But they certainly need to take a look at it long and hard. And, Jay, I know you're here now. We're talking about something that was posted on the team board about NASCAR playing a glum, frustrated second fiddle to F1 this past weekend. So, and what some of the takeaways might be we'll get to that later, I guess. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, and I read through the couple articles that got posted. I see two sides of it. I definitely, and I caught the tail end of your sharing there, I do think there are some things that NASCAR can do and needs to do to improve, as well as the track. I believe it mentioned of making it, going back to making it an event, not a race. I think there's some truth to that. I know that NASCAR has been very prominent with the COVID protocol and all for sponsors and stuff like that, but that is what makes it an event, a three-day weekend event, and not just a race. To compare the numbers directly, though, and you kind of alluded to it there, Sharon, just take this weekend. The weather forecast at Kansas was not the best, as it turned out. They did have the, you know, a little bit of a rain delay, and then the wind stayed with it. So they had that going against us. Weather's a little bit better in Texas. Second, you got Formula One returning after what it was a two-year hiatus. So, yeah, there was a lot more hype with it. You know, it's been missed, again, if you haven't been able to see it for 2 years. So you can't really compare directly, but you can take away from it some of the things that I mentioned of maybe NASCAR does need to take a hard look at going back to. I understand they're trying to save teams money and all, combining or slimming down the practice, qualifying, and how long the teams are at the track, but also go back to making it an event to attend, not just a race.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, this can go a couple different ways, and the bad way for this to go is for NASCAR to look at it and start trying to come up with justifications or reasons why or excuses. And that's the easy way to do it, and that's the way to explain it away without acknowledging that there's serious issues with the product that must be addressed in order to fix it and improve the trajectory of the sport. Yes, Jay's right. There's been COVID protocols and it's really restricted the race weekends, but let's not pretend for a second that attendance was not a problem before COVID. While we were talking for the past 5 to 8 years, attendance has been down 50% or more at a lot of these bigger tracks, and that was well before COVID protocols, well before they went down to a one-day show. So it's not just that it's been hurting NASCAR race attendance. To paraphrase some of the drivers, I'm not looking at the The article, so forgive me if the direct quotes aren't quite exactly right, but to paraphrase some of the drivers, Kyle Busch brought up the fact of the novelty piece. NASCAR has 38 shows per year between the All-Star race, the regularly scheduled races, the Clash, et cetera. So 38 shows per year versus Formula One's one, and Formula One's going to have two next year. They're going to go back to COTA as well as Miami. So there is a bit of a novelty factor versus NASCAR, which is more of a routine every single weekend piece. But compare that against the comments from Denny Hamlin and Brad Keselowski, who pointed the finger more at the track promoters, and I kind of agree with them, having recently been to Talladega a couple weeks ago. It used to be a much bigger event to go to the track, and it was starting to fade before COVID, and I think COVID was more of an excuse than anything else to pull the rest of the plug out. Yes, obviously they restricted it a lot because of COVID. But like I said, I think they used that as an excuse to do the things they wanted to do anyway, namely not putting the money into the big promotions and the concerts and all the things that the other non-racing related events that brought people to the track that turned it into an event. Brad Keselowski cited that his track promoters want somewhere between $20,000 and $40,000 for a driver to bring a merchandise trailer to the track for the weekend. Well, that would have been a great opportunity for Brad Keselowski to go out there and sign autographs at his merch trailer, but he doesn't want to pay the track $20,000 to $40,000 just to park his trailer out there. There's obstacles that are preventing things from happening. We've talked about it before, about the cost going out there. You're looking at $150 per person per day to get into these racetracks, and that's not counting the gas to drive where, the hotels to stay there overnight, the overpriced food at the racetrack. All those things combined together to push people away from the races, and each single one of those need to be looked at and addressed and figure out why or what can be done to improve on that end. The other piece there that I want to address, I did watch the Formula One race. I had it up on my iPad while I had the NASCAR race up on the television, and it was jarring, absolutely jaw on the floor, jarring how much superior the Formula One broadcast product was to NASCAR. It wasn't even close. It's barely comparable. Formula One doesn't have commercial interruptions. I understand that there's sponsorship issues and whatnot, but the pendulum has swung far too much in the one direction, where NASCAR races seem to be commercial breaks occasionally interrupted with brief glimpses of racing. And during those brief glimpses of racing is almost continuous promotion for some sort of product, sponsor, or brought to you by type promotion there. The other piece of the Formula One broadcast that was vastly superior was the graphical presentation. Much more relevant, much more timely. They felt like they didn't clutter up the screen while providing a lot of information. And the broadcasters themselves were much more coherent. They didn't bring up extraneous conversation, things that were irrelevant to the race, trying to play up drama that doesn't really exist. None of that happened in the Formula One broadcast. So one of the articles cited how NASCAR's focused on the broadcast end at the expense of the racetrack. Well, if that's been their focus, it's been misplaced, because Formula One's beating them on the broadcast end too. Something has got to give, and they've got to look at it from the perspective of it's something that needs to be improved on, not just explained away by circumstance.
Okay, Tommy.
Yeah, I kind of saw where Kenny Wallace is going to be at Gateway doing the pre-race this next or for 2022 for NASCAR, and you know, fans were like, hey, why don't you go back to NASCAR or go back to TV, it'd be great to have you. And he was like, I don't want to do it. And he was like, but I agree with y'all. He was like, we need more shows. He said FS1 does a great job, or F1 or FS1 does a great job right now with the one show they have for NASCAR, but that they need to do something different, maybe have a little more. And, I mean, I agree with the Booth comment, too. The SRX this year with Alan Bestwick was amazing. I wish NASCAR would consider bringing him back. Nothing against Rick Allen, Dale Jr., and Jeff Burton and Steve Letarte in the booth. But out of all those I just named, the one for sure that does not need to go anywhere, in my opinion, is Dale Jr. And for I mean, we already know Jeff Gordon's leaving. I think Clint Bowyer did a great job. Definitely need to bring him back. He definitely needs to be somewhere. So those are the only two locks I think NASCAR really has in the booth. Because Mike Joy's getting older. I don't know when he'll retire or if that's even close or anything. It'll be sad when that happens because he's been doing it for so long. But, oh, and Larry McReynolds, he's got to stay too. He has to. Those are the three locks, I guess I would say, for NASCAR in the booth. And then I was also going to say, for the F1, too, the one thing is they don't really come to America a lot, so it is kind of a big deal when they come, and that was a big reason for the attendance. And I feel like Nashville, when they did the street course, that was really hyped up, too. But that was kind of disappointing, I feel like, if I remember, or maybe it wasn't. I don't get into F1 and IndyCar, watching cars go in circles, stock cars, I guess. But, yeah, I could just see on Twitter where F1 was killing it. Like, I have a friend that I went to college with that's not even into motorsports remotely at all, and he even watched the F1 race. And he, like I said, he is not into it. So I don't know how he caught a whiff of it because I didn't even tell him anything about it or anything. So he just posted about it, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. So, yeah, NASCAR does have some things they need to work on. And another thing that I think it has to do with is tracks. And good thing that they added COTA this year. I hope they go back next year. I think they are. Because F1 goes there, and it seems to be a good race. And now they want to do a street course like how F1 does. I also think that's a good idea. I don't know how far off it is, but I do like the idea of that. So maybe NASCAR will take the right steps, but they do have to work on the booth area, the track, promotion, everything that we've mentioned.
Okay, Jay?
Well, I think we all agree that there are some areas that NASCAR certainly can look at improving. I don't know that I'd be hitting the panic button as of yet with that. They have taken great strides in different directions. Look at the markets they're trying to go into, whether it be Nashville, now the Northwest, and provide that. I don't know, you know, and I think Mike had it right. Kyle Busch was saying it was more from the side of the rarity, that if you got that many schedules that they have on, it becomes, oh, I'll catch the next one wherever it be. I think those are the fans, though, that they could waffle at any point on any given thing. They're not going to be there week in and week out. So I don't know that I agree with that aspect to it as much. But Denny Hamlin hit on it. I do think that it is about the promotion and making it an event, whether it be from the track side, NASCAR side. And Mike hit it on it. I think it's one of those things when NASCAR went away from having the title sponsor and a little bit more money versus the brought to you by sponsors that they have, that package, that business model. I mean, I understand maybe what they were asking for was a little much on the overall title sponsor, but I think that is what makes the difference, a huge part of it anyway, because I know how much Sprint definitely put into it when they were the title sponsor, as well as Monster, and Monster obviously does a lot of that type of, whether it be Monster Jam with the Monster trucks, motocross. I think NASCAR maybe asked for a little much, but that's, you know, they got bills to pay too. So I can't say that they were asking for more than what they needed.
Yeah, I think we're walking down a slippery slope here. I agree with a lot of what's being said. I think NASCAR does need to address some things. So I'm not saying that there's not an issue here, but I think we have to be careful because us bad-mouthing the sport that we love is not going to help it either. Yes, we need to call attention to what needs our attention and everything, but to take that hard line and to say NASCAR's got to do this and NASCAR's got to do that, I think we've got to be really careful with that because NASCAR does need to take a look at some things, and I think that we're all in agreement with that. That's not the point that I'm trying to make here. But the more we badmouth our sport, the less people are going to be interested in it. So I do think that there are some good things that NASCAR has done. They were the first to come back when COVID came out. And I think that they were the role model for other sports last year when this thing hit. I do think that, you know, you guys brought it up. I think it's more track promotion, and an article that went along with this was that NASCAR is going to hold tracks more accountable for what they're doing as far as promoting and getting attendance at the track. And the cost is one of those things. And I've been bringing up that point for a long, long time, going back to the Bristol repave. The cost of going to the track is just incredibly high. And I know they've done some things for kids to come free. Kids under 12 can get in for free. And I think that's all good and well. But, you know, what you were talking about for the haulers and all of that, some of that is a little outpacing itself, and it's hurting the sport more than it's helping the sport, putting those kind of pricing points out there. So yeah, they need to look at it, but there's a lot to like about NASCAR as well, and I don't want this to come across as we're all negative on NASCAR, because we're obviously all fans, and I'm not chastising anybody here. I'm just saying that you know, it's a slippery slope when we start going down this path of saying F1 is doing it all right and we're not doing anything right. F1, and Jay, you brought it up, they haven't been here for 2 years. So that is one of the reasons why they had such a big attendance. You're not going to not have a NASCAR race for 2 years. So you cannot compete with that. That's one of the things that we have to put in perspective here. It's almost like comparing apples to oranges, if you will. I'm in agreement that there's things that we need to look at, but I don't think it's as dire and as, you know, a knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, we need to look at some things, but I'm not thinking that it's as dire as the article maybe puts it. So let's kind of keep it in perspective here, because there's a lot of things that NASCAR is doing right as well. And I think changing up the schedule the way they are is a really good thing that they're doing. And I think that I think everybody needs to take a look at what they're doing to help promote the sport and keep it into our future versus considering it as something that's going down the narrow path of oblivion. So, Mike, I'm curious to hear your final thoughts.
You're right. There's a fine line between being too negative on the sport, but at the same time, you have to be honest enough to be able to look at it from a constructive criticism standpoint. And
yeah,
there's plenty of organizations well beyond the motorsport world that have talked themselves to the point of failure by everyone being in agreement, hey, we're doing the right thing, and all the things that everyone else is saying, well, that everyone else is wrong. Well, that everyone else, sometimes they're the customers. And when the customers aren't happy with the product, eventually they stop purchasing the product, whether that is some sort of gadget at the store or race tickets or even watching the race on TV. So you're right. We don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think it's time to completely panic yet. But at the same time, I think it's time for some introspection on, you know, what is the product that NASCAR is putting forth? Is there ways to improve it, and how do we accomplish those improvements without sacrificing the core of the sport that has attracted the fan base that we currently have? I think those are some questions that should be asked during the off season, and maybe come back with some sort of idea of what they want to do going forward to, yeah, you're right. Formula One is not a direct competitor to NASCAR, but at the same time, it's definitely a comparable product in terms of it's a motorsports product that is run on, in this case, the same racetrack that NASCAR runs on, and how NASCAR can either leverage the popularity of Formula One to help themselves or at least learn some of the things that Formula One has done to break into the U.S. market and use that to improve NASCAR's product to appeal to more fans. And I think that's what we need to look at going forward. Don't be so critical as to try and turn people off from the sport, but at the same time, be realistic to the point where you're willing to accept criticism from the standpoint of making the sport we love better.
Okay. Tommy, it's your turn to bring up the next topic.
Let's go with Junior and Boyer and Stewart testing the next-gen cars at Bowman Gray Stadium in Mississippi.
Okay, Jay?
Well, this is an interesting thing. Obviously, they're having them doing it as a test for the car. I don't know that you could pick anybody better to do a test for the next-gen car. Some veterans with experience and a lot of input within the racing industry. You know, Tony Stewart, we just talked about that. He's now into NHRA. So across the spectrum, I know Mike put it of it would be kind of interesting to do it as a actual race from a broadcaster's point, bringing in, let's see, who did you mention here, Mike? Jamie Mack, Jeff Gordon, and then Sharon moved it down to the bottom as I was reading it. Jimmy Johnson,
sorry.
There we go. That would be kind of interesting. I know we talked about this. It definitely helps from the perspective of, say, Boyer and Junior going to be broadcasters next year, having them in a car that they are talking about a car that they hadn't been in. So I do think that that's something NASCAR looked at. So there again, maybe getting not as a full test, but Larry McReynolds, Jamie Mack, obviously be a good one. Some of these others that do the broadcasting, at least getting in the car and experiencing it, even if it's a ride along with another one of the drivers, so that they do have that direct feel for it when they're talking about it. So I do like that idea, and I do kind of like the idea of making it a race. If they could put that together of an exhibition race of some sort prior to the season, I think that'd be kind of cool, and I think NASCAR could capitalize on that. The matter is,
okay.
It's a matter of.
I got to interrupt you, Jay.
Yep.
I'm going to have to run out of time. Okay, we're at that time of the night. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, but we will continue to have our conversation, but we'll record the rest of that conversation, and it will be available as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. We let you know at this point of the night, especially for those new listeners that are tuning in for the first time, so that you know how you can listen to the rest of that information, and I'll go out on Twitter when we're finished here and let you know that the podcast is available. At that point, you can go to our player, either at Blog Talk Radio or here on FanForRacing.com, and just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So, again, we didn't want anybody caught off guard and not know how to listen to the rest of this conversation. So, Jay, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
The only thing I was going to say yet there was if you're going to do that, it's going to be during the off season or early next year prior to the season. Now we're talking about adding a race to an already long schedule, and we just talked about that of maybe that's a downfall. So, what do you do?
Okay, Mike.
Sorry, fumbling for the mute button. All right. So, yeah, Jay already kind of laid out what's going on here, and I completely agree, mostly because I'm the guy who brought up the idea about doing the exhibition race. I'm sure it's no coincidence that Dale Jr. and Clint Boyer were two of the people tagged to do it, because like Jay said, having your current broadcast team at least have some sort of familiarity with driving those cars is very important. We talked about it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Todd Bodine getting back in the truck, bringing relevance back to the Fox Sports 1 booth in terms of the truck series coverage. Well, it's the same thing where Dale Jr. and Clint Boyer will have had experience behind the wheel of those cars. Now, as far as using it to actually have an exhibition race, I don't know that this week, I think it's this weekend or next week that they're running this thing. I don't think it's the best time to put an exhibition race on together with that, but maybe do it the same weekend as the Clash out in the L.A. Coliseum. So if we're trying to break into that L.A. market, what better way to do it than to have the Clash, but also have whatever name you want to put up, you know, the Golden Series of NASCAR or whatever, with all the retired superstars. Mr. Gordon, now that he's the vice president of operations for Hendrick Motorsports, he has to be Mr. Gordon now. But Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart, if they can get Bill Elliott to come out there, I mean, he's been doing SRX. I'm sure Tony Stewart could probably talk him into coming out there and running a next-gen car for an exhibition race. Get half a dozen to ten of those guys out there on the racetrack so you can have the Clash with the current guys, and then you can have the senior Clash or whatever you want to call it with the all-star legend guys. And I think that'd be a great promotional weekend to really get some interest in the LA area and give fans the opportunity to see and interact with the current stars, as well as some of the biggest stars that the sport has in history. I think that'd be a great look.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's great to see these guys testing the next-gen car. You guys mentioned the obvious reasons for Dale Jr. and Clint Boyer to be doing it, but I'm happy to see Tony Stewart on that list as well, because Tony Stewart's been taking a lot of flack for not being involved with NASCAR recently, especially with his new announcement that he's entering now the NHRA. And so for him to come back and test this car, the next-gen car with NASCAR, I think, is a good thing. And as a team owner, I think it's just as important that he have an understanding of what this next-gen car is all about. So I'm all for it. I do think you guys are hitting on a great idea, whether or not NASCAR is tuning in to hear what the idea is or whether or not they'll play on that. I'm not sure, but it's certainly a lot of fun to talk about, and we'll see what happens. Maybe they will pick up on it and do something about that. So, Tommy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
All I could think about was how cool it was they picked Bowman Gray to do the test. And then I was immediately thinking, no, it's going to be the L.A. Coliseum. And what not a better place than to test the next-gen cars at Bowman Gray? Because I'm sure the L.A. Coliseum is probably going to look similar to how Bowman Gray looks at Sepa, you know, a lot more grandstands. But that's going to be cool if that's how that's going to go. That makes it really exciting. Sad to see that the Bud Shootout won't be at Daytona, but at least they're going to where they played a Rose Bowl at, and they're doing that. And of course, I agree with you guys. No brainer to pick Junior and Boyer to do it, so that way they're familiar with the cars and the drivers and what they're experiencing. And then Tony Stewart, what a busy guy. Old Stuart Haas, old Eldora, runs the SRX, drives in the SRX, NHRA now, drag racing, and now he's going to test the next-gen car. What does he not do? He's really becoming basically full-time everything motorsports.
the NASCAR handyman.
That's awesome, though. I'm glad. I'll never forget him in the 20 Home Depot car and then having his own team and now owning that team still. And, hey, he's got Harvick as the driver. But them picking Bowman Gray is really cool. And I hope this also means that maybe they're considering doing the SRX or something there. I mean, there's just so many different things that can be connected from this, like, is the L.A. Coliseum race going to be like a Bowman Gray race? Because why else would they test the next-gen cars there? Boyer, Jr., and Stewart are great picks for the cars. And, yeah, I think it would be cool, too, if they did a throwback race with some of the older drivers. You got to have Michael Waltrip and Bobby Labonte in there. Got to add them to the list in that race before the Clash.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
I think a couple of things, that key things that got hit on there on how important Tony Stewart's involvement is. We mentioned from Dale Jr. and Clint Boyer, they're broadcasters and more recent drivers. But Tony Stewart, Sharon said it from the owner standpoint. And going back to a previous conversation, Mike said of somebody that's going to be blunt about it. Tony mm-hmm. Stewart's pretty vocal, if you don't know him. He says what's on his mind, and yeah, he doesn't worry about hurting somebody's feelings. So if there is a problem or something that needs addressing, somebody like Tony Stewart's going to say it. So I think that comes into play. And then, Sharon, I think you're the one that mentioned it, of the flack he has kind of gotten for his lack of involvement specifically at the track come race day with his four-car Cup Series team. So, and he's a name. I mean, obviously, and he's known across the entire country. Some people know him as a sprint car driver. Some know him as a track owner. Some know him as now the SRX Series, and he's going to be known now as a drag race owner. So the name itself brings something, but I think there are a lot of other aspects to it that he is a very key element to this, I think. And if they were to do some type of exhibition, got to be careful with that. I know Tony's obviously still very active in a lot of things. They've done the old timers race before. It doesn't always go well. You got to be careful about how you go about that and do that. I think that was at Bristol a few years back where they ran into an issue with that. But I think there are some things there that could be done to really hype it and make it a big deal.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts? Follow up?
Sure. I mean, you're exactly right about Tony Stewart getting a chance to get behind the car. Now, don't forget, Tony Stewart is a car owner. He's going to own four times, six or seven chassis per race team. So he's going to have access to drive one of those cars whenever he wants to. Same thing for Mr. Gordon. I mean, HMS is literally less than a mile from Charlotte Motor Speedway. So if they want to, they can throw a car in a trailer and take it down the street and put it on the racetrack, and anybody in the leadership position there can drive it. But at the same time, how many of those cars are you going to get out on the racetrack at once? It's good to have a broader spectrum of driver and experience out there too. So yes, the ownership end of seeing the car is good, but at the same time, it's not like it's some kind of a unique opportunity either. In terms of putting the race together as an actual exhibition competition, as much as I'd like to see it as a fan, I'm sure logistically it would be an issue. There's also kind of the issue of, do you want the first winner in the new Gen 7 car, the first guy to take the checkered flag in that car, to be a retired driver who hasn't been in a Cup car in several years? I don't know. I'm not sure how the optics on that look. Maybe good, maybe not so good. And, oh, by the way, Jay, I'm sure you picked up on it as well as I did. You know, I can tell Tommy is super young because he referred to the Clash as the Bud Shootout. And you and me from back in the day, we remember the Clash, the first time it was the Clash, and I still have to catch myself referring to the Xfinity Series as the Busch Series. So you can always date a guy by the entitlement sponsorship that slip into conversation every once in a while.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot to add. I think that I'm glad to see these guys are testing the car. I think they're going to give some good feedback. And I think it's all good. So we'll wait and see what NASCAR does. Tommy, do you have any final words?
Yeah, I want to tell you guys, I probably started watching. I mean, I was born in 95, so I don't really remember those first couple of seasons. But I know by the diecast that I started collecting in like 96 or 97 or something. I mean, Johnny Benson was still in the Cheerios car. So, but on TV, I would say 01 was probably when I remember, because I remember Bobby Labonte flipping in that polar bear car that 18 Interstate batteries at Dega. I remember that wreck and Junior winning. So that's probably as early back as I can remember. Earnhardt's crash in 01, unfortunately. But, yeah, it was called the Bud Shootout. But it was also a night race. And I was really hoping that they would not do the road course and do a night Bud Shootout race or Bush Clash, whatever it's called. And but I'll take the L.A. Coliseum, and I'd really like to see them do something at Bowman Gray since this is part of the topic. SRX, anything. Really, it looked like ARCA used to race there from what I was reading, and a bunch of names get started there, like Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson and Corey LaJoie have all raced there, and Matt DiBenedetto won there. So, yeah, they need to do something there, or NASCAR should do something there, or SRX, or just anybody. But either way, great picks, calls. I'm going to love to hear Junior talk about it on his podcast or his download on YouTube. And Clint Bowyer, he's hilarious. Can't wait. And then y'all are right. Tony Stewart, he's going to let NASCAR know. Like, if this car's trash, he's going to tell them.
Okay, Jay, you get to bring up the next top topic.
As I said, I just want to know if Tom even knows what the Goodies Dash series is.
Oh, no, man, we used to no kidding. We used to sponsor Mike Swaim Jr. back in the day. That was one of my first experiences as the racetrack, is when we were sponsors for Mike Swaim Jr. with the Pennzoil car in the Dash series.
Yeah, that used to actually be the first race at Daytona Speed Weeks, was the Goodies Dash series. Let's talk about the Cup series. Following this past weekend, Kyle Larson has locked into the final championship four twice, I guess, technically. But the rest of it, Elliott, let's see, what does it say here from Bob Pockris? Elliott will clinch with a 15th place finish without any stage points. Hamlin with a 12th place finish or better. All other drivers depends on stage results and what other drivers do. Even Joey Logano is technically not in a hardcore must-win. If he gets in on points, he only needs 27 points, and that's compared to, what, five drivers. So I don't see anybody out of it, especially we know Joey Logano can win at Martinsville. So what kind of setup are we seeing here at Martinsville and into the championship four?
Okay, Mike, you're up first.
Well, we're keep talking about Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin like they're a lock. Don't forget, Chase Elliott plus 34, Denny Hamlin plus 32. Ask Kevin Harvick what it means to come into Martinsville plus 42, because that's what he did last year and ended up watching the other four guys race for a championship last year in Phoenix. So, yes, Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin are definitely in strong positions points-wise, but I wouldn't write their names in ink yet on my final four bracket. With regard to that last points position for the guys who aren't named Elliott or Hamlin, that's really a toss-up. And it almost feels like whoever's going to get it is going to get it by default, because none of those guys have been running particularly well. Obviously well enough to make it into the final eight, but you look at the three Penske cars. All three Penske cars have been down on speed lately. Blaney has been at best hot and cold. He's got wins, but when he's not winning, he's running middle of the pack or further back. Brad Keselowski's probably been the most consistent out of the three Penske cars, but he really hasn't been a win threat very much this year. Every once in a while, he's got one win, and every once in a while, he threatens here and there, but the 2 car has not been its usual front-running self. The 22 car, again, one win out of the year, but not the biggest threat that they've ever been. So those three Penske cars are really tough to pick one way or the other. And then you look at the two Joe Gibbs cars, Kyle Busch and Martin Truex have both been weak, to be honest with you. Kyle Busch is he's probably been the hardest on himself than anybody has, where the 18 car has been good enough to get where they're at, but not great. I would say if I had to pick any of those remaining five who aren't currently either locked in or in a very strong points position, I'd have to pick Martin Truex. And that is solely because he tends to run very well at short tracks, and he won at Martinsville earlier this year. So I would say out of those five cars, if Martin Truex in the 19 doesn't win the race, I think he's going to be the one who does well enough to advance to the final four. So it's going to be Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Martin Truex, and Denny Hamlin in the final four at Phoenix, according to my picks.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts.
Kyle Larson is probably going to get 10 wins in the championship. That's going to be my prediction. Hamlin and Chase Elliott are runners-up unless if things go horribly wrong for both of them at Martinsville, which that could happen. The fourth spot, in my opinion, is wide open. But I agree with you guys. Truex and Logano, in my opinion, are probably going to be the ones contending for that fourth spot at Martinsville behind the other three that I just mentioned, because I feel like it was not too long ago that they were battling it out for a win at Martinsville in the playoffs. And I feel like Elliott and Hamlin were doing that a few years ago, too. So, but I know that Brad Keselowski is not going to make it easy, and neither is Kyle Busch. So we can't count them out either. Or really Ryan Blaney, but I think Ryan Blaney's probably in the position to most to lose, because I don't know if he's won at a short track yet or not in the cup level. I know he's got the Roval, Atlanta, and Talladega a couple times, but I don't think a short track's on his resume yet. So I would say he's probably going to be the odd man out for sure this week at Martinsville. But yeah, I think everybody's chasing Kyle Larson, and Hamlin was good. Hamlin has been solid all year. He cut it on at the beginning of the playoffs. We always keep on saying, you know, is this going to be his year? So let's not count him out, because he's good at Martinsville too. And we can't count Chase Elliott out. I mean, he's the fan favorite, and Martinsville's a good track, and Phoenix is for him too. So I'm sure if Kyle Larson is nervous by anybody, it's probably his teammate Chase Elliott at this current moment.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one to make a call, because there's so many things that can happen at Martinsville to take drivers out of the competition. And you mentioned Kevin Harvick losing that 42-point cushion at Martinsville just last year. That could happen to any one of these drivers. The only driver who's safe going into the Final Four right now is Kyle Larson. And I think he makes everybody else look like they're just not quite up to par right now. So you're right, Truex won it at Martinsville, the most recent winner at Martinsville. So that gives him a little bit of an edge, but he could be taken out as well as Joey Logano, who's also good at a track like Martinsville. I think it's too tough to predict it. I just don't know how you can really predict it for this Martinsville race, because there's so much that can happen. And here's what I do know. Somebody is going to be super, super happy, and the rest of everybody is going to be disappointed. And some people are going to be angry. So we'll see what happens when Martinsville is said and done. I've read things that said that people are going to be afraid to do anything at Martinsville. They're going to want to take care of their car so they can be there at the end. And I've heard others are so desperate right now, they're willing to do just about anything to get that win at Martinsville, because they're so far back. So I think it's a wait and let's wait and see what happens type of situation. I just don't think you can predict exactly what's going to happen at Martinsville, to be perfectly honest with you, because drivers that might have done well at one point may not do so well this time around. So there's a lot of difference between racing Martinsville in the spring and racing Martinsville in the fall. So I'm a wait and see what happens. How about you, Jay?
No, you did predict it, and it's a guarantee, I think. Obviously, it's an elimination race. Four drivers are going to be disappointed, probably angry as well, you know, for one reason or another. I'd have to actually, from here, to try and even come to picking who's moving on, go from the bottom. Joey Logano has the biggest hill to overcome, but we know he can win as well as then Truex. I think Blaney and Kyle Busch, they're right in the middle, but are the two that maybe that track isn't the best for them. But then you got to wait and see what happens. And I think back to Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin. When they got to bumping and banging, it was Brad Keselowski that was there to capitalize. Martin Truex and Joey Logano, we've seen them bump and bang and push and shove. Who comes out on top, or does it go to the next one down the list? So that's where Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch kind of come in of can they get by it and be the one in position to capitalize. And that's not to take anything away from Chase Elliott, who may be trying to, like you said, play it a little safe and hope the cushion that he has holds up and shoot for that 15th place finish. But we know he's also very good at Martinsville. So I think it's going to be an extremely wild one. And other than Kyle Larson, we're not going to know who's in until that checkered flag flies, because all three of those positions could change.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up.
So this is nothing against Ryan Blaney. I like the guy. He's a good dude, good racer, but I'm so happy he wrecked yesterday. And the reason I am is me and Andy were talking about this on the race chat, is – it was shaping up like there was not going to be much of a bubble battle. Everyone was pretty well sorted on points. I think the gap was something like 29 points or so between fourth place and fifth place. And then Ryan Blaney crashed. And now we've got this gap. We've got four drivers separated by less than 10 points. So before Blaney crashed out and you had such a huge points gap, pretty much everybody in that bottom four was in must-win territory. And what I think that would have led to would have been a bunch of dumb Hail Mary kind of moves that probably ended up just wrecking a bunch of race cars. I think what this is going to produce for this coming weekend is going to be a much more balanced race where guys have to really decide if they want to take a chance and risk tearing up their car, but know that they can't just sacrifice track position because they don't have track position to lose in terms of points positions. So you're going to see guys defending their position and trying to advance, but at the same time trying to take care of their cars, knowing that if they tear their car up, they may not be able to point their way in. If they can win the race, that's great, but they still need to be there at the end to either try and take a shot at winning or at least be points ahead of the other guy. So I think Ryan Blaney's misfortune yesterday really helped us out as the fans. I think it's going to produce a much more enjoyable race for us this coming Sunday. Not that Martinsville is going to suck. Martinsville is always one of the best races of the year, but I think it's going to be a real banger coming up on Sunday.
Tommy.
I love super speedways and short tracks, so I'm super excited for Martinsville. I can't wait. Especially since it's playoffs, and I think it's a night race now. It's going to be awesome, and I think it'll definitely be entertaining. Kyle Larson's locked in. Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin should be, as long as nothing happens to them. But that's the key: if nothing happens to them. I have a feeling that it's going to be crazy, kind of like Bristol. Some feelings are going to get hurt, and we might see, you know, some – always love a good helmet throw. So that's what I'm hoping for. Someone's going to get wrecked. Someone's going to get out, take that helmet, and chunk it. I can't wait, and I would definitely say that Ryan Blaney's probably the one outside looking in, maybe him and Kyle Busch and Brad Kay. I think Joey and Martin Truex fight for this final position, if everything goes well for Chase and Denny.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot to add. So, Jay, I'm going to give you the final word here.
Well, I was kind of interested in it either way. If Blaney, as Mike mentioned, Blaney hadn't wrecked, because then it was, you got four drivers, five drivers that it's winner take all, and every one of them is a winner and a good front runner at Martinsville. With this shakeup now, I think it does change the dynamic of it, because it is try to get the win and lock in, but also you got the race within the race of who you're racing and where they're at. So it changes the dynamic. I'm not going to say one way or the other from that aspect of which is better, but it definitely does change it. And we mentioned it of depending on, say, Chase Elliott or Denny Hamlin has an issue, how much that changes where they got a race to and who they're racing. We might see a really tough 1-2 position battle, and it may involve some non-playoff drivers as they need, if they need one or two more points, some drivers get a little more aggressive mid-pack, you know, for that 14th, 15th, 16th spot if it comes down to it. So I think it's going to be a huge, huge race. That one should be good on ratings both at the track as well as on TV.
Okay. With that, I think we're going to go ahead and close out our NASCAR Hot Topic sound off and start our roundtable here. So, Mike, let's start with you.
It's going to be Mike underscore Orzel on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. I should be available this coming Thursday, so I'll look forward to talking to you all then. Next week's not looking so good. Looks like I'm going to have to be working. I'll get back to you on the week following. I'm really hoping I'm going to be, at the very least, be able to make that Monday show after the championship race in Phoenix. So I'll keep you posted on what the plan is there.
Okay. Tommy.
At Cincinnati5Fan or Tommy C or Tommy underscore 20, Tommy C underscore 24 on Twitter. I haven't tweeted anything in a couple days now. I did actually, Sharon, just type up my fan at the track article,
yep.
And I did email it over to you. So it hopefully
and I got it.
Looks good. Hopefully it looks
okay.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, I did read through it, and I enjoyed reading it, so sounds good so far. Okay, if I can just get through the issues with the website, we'll be okay. Jay.
You can follow me, Michael Hoosman, on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I got to say, I'm really looking forward to that article by Tommy, not just at the fan at the track, but first time fan at the track, especially being Talladega, your favorite track. So I am really looking forward to that.
Okay. And I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. And I did not get Sam's recap up today because of issues that we had at the website. We're still working on some of those issues, so hopefully I'll be able to get that up. If I can, it'll be late tomorrow or sometime on Wednesday before I'm even going to get a chance to do that. Same with your article, Tommy. It's going to be probably mid to late week before I'm going to be able to get that up there. But watch for that because it is a fun article to read as a first-time visitor to the track. So I know fans are going to enjoy Tommy's feedback there. Also, we'll look forward to the races coming up this weekend, and Jay and I will be doing our Fan for Racing preview show on Thursday night starting at 7:30. And definitely looking forward to that as we preview Martinsville. And then there's just one more race after that, and then it's Phoenix. Phoenix will close out the season, so we're really winding down on the season here, and that makes me a little bit sad. But we do want to do a big shout-out to those who are tuning in to listen to our broadcast, whether it's live or on the podcast. We do appreciate each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to hear what we have to say. And then also to our Fan for Racing crew here tonight, Michael Orzel and Tommy Kraft and Jay Huseman. Really appreciate you guys being available tonight, as well as Sal Segala for the earlier part of our show. We had two guests on tonight, Nick Sanchez, who won the ARCA Menards Series season finale at Kansas Speedway, was on. He gave us a great interview. And then we also talked to Kyle Kelter, who is a three-time, I've got two-time champion up there, but Sal tells me he's a three-time late model Madera champion. And Sal did a great interview with him as well. So if you haven't listened to the earlier part of the show, I'd really encourage you to go back and hear both of those interviews. Okay, so I think that's it for tonight. And we'll look forward to talking to everybody again on Thursday night. So I guess that's a wrap, guys.
Night, everybody.
See you Thursday. Talk to you Thursday.
Okay. Good night, everybody.